Hello,
Hello.
people.
Are you okay?
Yes, I am. Okay. How is everybody doing today?
I'm doing all right, I suppose. Not super busy day, I guess. And I found out that I got in to one of my roles for something, so that was cool. I kind of want to start over this intro because it's so awkward.
I think it's perfect. Anyways, today we will be covering two cases. The case I will be covering is Terry Beavers, aka known as Missy, and the unsolved murder of her, which is it's kind of a crazy one. So,
And I'm gonna be doing the Harp brothers, also known as the first documented case of serial killers in America.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I think we should just dive in because these kind of take a while. I think it's my turn to go first.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll just dive right in then. So, Terry Beavers, known as Missy, probably what I'm going to refer to her as during this entire case.
Mm-hmm.
Missy was born on the 9th of August in 1970. So, today she would be, I believe,
1970. She would have been 50.
Yeah, 50. And she was born in Graham, Texas. Now, this one low-key hits home. For any of y'all that don't know, I reside in North Texas, which is a very large statement because North Texas is gigantic. It's like the size of an entire state. But yeah. I reside in North Texas, and this actually, I think, is in Dallas.
Interesting.
So... And the thing is, I actually remember hearing about this, like, on, like, my local news thing about this happening years ago. And so, it's kind of crazy. Anyways.
My mom probably didn't let me watch it, so I haven't heard of this.
Oh, I actually think it was, like, recent-ish. Like, I feel like it was 2016. Hold on, it's in my notes.
Oh, then I just don't watch the news, bro.
Yeah. Hold on. Well, it's somewhere in here. I tend to not organize my notes. I just brain dump. Anyways. Thinking about this one this week, and I was like, you know what, I kind of want to cover that, so I did all the research, and now I'm ready. So, she was born in Graham, Texas, and she moved to Jacksboro, Texas at some point in her life, I guess. Growing up, she was described as a very friendly person, very charismatic, kind of like selfless, and she was always mm-hmm. willing to help others. She was overall very kind and sweet and genuine.
She's just the good girl.
Yeah. So, in 1988, she graduated from Jacksboro High School. In 1995, she graduated from Tarleton College with a Bachelor of Science. I actually wanted to go to Tarleton College for, like, a second, and then I was like, nah, bro. Because I know somebody that went there.
Gotcha.
So, she worked in retail for a few years, and then she met Brandon Beavers. And they just, I mean, like, they just hit it off, you know?
And well, that's then, good.
Yeah, and then... A few years later, on the 20th of June, 1998, they got married.
Aw, cute.
So, that's kind of a quick recap of how she just kind of her life. And Missy went back to school and she got a teaching certificate in special education, and then she taught for several years. So, after teaching for years, she quit because she got pregnant. And on the 11th of March, she gave birth to Hannah, her first daughter. On the 7th of March, 2003, she gave birth to Allie, her second daughter. And on the 6th of November, 2007, she gave birth to Sarah, her third daughter.
That's a lot of kids.
So at this point in her life, she's had three kids. She got that baby weight, but everybody has, every woman has. It's perfectly normal, but that kind of inspired her to start working out and getting very healthy and very fit. And so she actually ended up starting her own company. It was like a health and fitness company called Camp Gladiator. So that's it. I mean, like, I've heard of these. They're like all over the place.
That sounds familiar. Camp Gladiator.
Well, so it was like a workout camp. Like, you'd go every morning or something for so long. I mean, like, these are eerily, like, I hear about all these different workout programs, all these different, like, things that people started, and it's really cool. I used to do a few of them here and there. So she actually ended up starting one of her own after she got, you know, very healthy, very fit, started working out all the time. So,
yeah.
Anyways, in 2016, Missy and her family moved to Red Oak, which is near Dallas, for any of you that know Texas in and out, because I actually didn't know that Red Oak was near Dallas.
I don't know any of these cities.
And she became a head instructor for Camp Gladiator. Well, didn't really become. She just kind of was. And she had like 45-minute classes. Wait. Yeah, her classes were usually like 45-minute classes. And she always got up 30 to 40 minutes early to set up. Like, she always got... Oh, okay. Okay, I'm remembering, guys. My notes are kind of sloppy, but we're just going to go from memory at this point. Basically, she would, like, go to this camp thing, and it was always, like, super early in the morning. Like, really very early, like, 5 a.m., I believe. And the class was, like, 45 minutes long, but she would get there 30 to 40 minutes early every day to set up. And it was always outside unless it was raining.
That's gross. Imagine getting someplace 30 to 40 minutes early to set up and then having to stay there another 45 minutes because you're the teacher.
Something tells me that this was like in a church. I don't really remember. And I didn't write it down. And that's kind of bad on my part, guys. But I believe she was doing this in a church or like a rec center. Something like that. Can you still hear me pretty well?
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So, on April 17th, 2016, she saw that it was supposed to be raining the next day. So, on the 18th, she moved the class to be inside. The next day, April 18th, students started showing up at 5 a.m., and they found Missy's body brutally murdered in the church. Yeah, it was definitely a church.
It was a church. I looked it up.
Yeah. I was like, I know it's a church, but I didn't write specifically church, and that really infuriates me with myself. Anyways... So, okay, let's just recap this whole thing real quick. She gets there 30 to 40 minutes early to set up, and when the students actually get there at 5 a.m., they come in and Missy is just absolutely brutally murdered, and her body is there.
Yikes.
So when the EMTs arrived, they assumed it was robbery because there was, like, broken glass from the windows. Mm-hmm. And they determined Missy had been murdered from multiple puncture wounds in the head.
That doesn't seem like just a burglary.
Yeah. Also that she tried to fight. So police determined the attacker got in with a pry bar.
Mm-hmm.
Police also assumed that the robbery, it was just a robbery gotten wrong. Guy breaks in, sees her, freaks out, makes sure she's dead, and leaves. But this guys, this is where this case just really, I remember really researching this case and finding these videos that I'm about to talk to y'all about, and I just was so confused. They were weird. And I feel like any kind of case that is like a murder case and you just find weird videos is like eerie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Especially if you have like a lot of weird videos.
Yeah, so police assumed it was a robbery gone wrong, but they discovered that the church had footage, like surveillance footage, that actually showed what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, this all starts at 3:50 a.m. Missy, by the way, got there at 4:20, about 40 minutes before the class would have started at 5. So.
Got it.
This was weird. So, they're looking at the security footage of this guy breaking in. He broke in at 3:50. And this is the weird part. He was dressed head to toe in an entire mock SWAT uniform.
That's odd to break into some place with.
It was a mock uniform, so it was like not real.
Yeah.
And you could tell, like, You could not tell who this person was, like, at all. They had on full gear and, like, this giant helmet, and you could not see who it was. All you could see was their height and maybe their body type. Like, guys, this mock uniform, like, I don't know if y'all are seeing what even a SWAT uniform looks like, but this one was kind of similar, and they puff out, you know?
Yeah, if you're in full SWAT gear, the whole purpose of it is to protect you from, like, harm. So you're covered from head to toe in, like, thick padding and a giant helmet and, like large packs of supplies and stuff. So, like, you really couldn't, you couldn't be able to see what that person was.
So the next thing that was kind of weird about this footage was that the attacker was walking as if they were injured, and they were carrying a hammer.
That is not something a SWAT person would have.
Well, at this point, we've determined it's definitely not somebody who's in SWAT, because the uniform is quite obviously fake. It was not real by any means.
Oh, yeah.
But the person broke in with a pry bar, but as they were walking around, they were carrying a hammer. And it was so obvious in this footage that they were not robbing. They just walked around the church as if they were killing time.
I feel like they kind of were, because, you know, if you're getting there at 3:50 and she gets there at 4:20 on the dot every single day, you're just finding a place to hide.
Yeah. So, that's, you know, he was just waiting for his time to kill her. And,
yeah.
I mean, he didn't take anything. He maybe opened a few cabinets and just looked around, but, like, it was weird. About 4:20 a.m., Missy entered, and she was murdered. And that was also caught on footage. Police ruled theft out completely and investigated it as a homicide. So, this is the point where we kind of go into, like, is there anything suspicious going on in the area at this time? And there was a Nissan Altima that was caught on footage outside of the church. A few miles down, they had footage hours before the murder. And, like, they just had footage of this car driving around, but, like, slow.
That's extremely deliberate.
It was very weird. And they couldn't find a connection to the car, but they believed that there was one. So that was really odd. Anyways, to continue, they started looking through Missy's phone, and they found financial problems and marital problems as well. So this is when we start looking at, like, suspects, but we'll get to that in a second. She had been having affairs, and the husband was aware of the affairs.
Sorry. Excuse you. Okay, you know what? This is a murder podcast, but I don't need you to die on me here, all right? Just breathe, dude.
I swallowed dust.
Ugh. Good job.
I'm also allergic to it.
Awesome, good job.
So, okay. They found a creepy guy that messaged her. She was flirting with a guy on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn, I'm pretty sure, is some kind of app in which...
LinkedIn is basically an app in which you can apply for jobs or kind of, like, put your stuff out there so that people know what you want to be hired for and your skill level and skill set.
Yeah.
So if someone's flirting with you on LinkedIn, they kind of have very interesting standards.
There was one, like, creepy guy, and then there was a guy that she was, like, deliberately flirting with.
Oh.
So 2 days after the murder, Brandon came into the police station for questioning. Brandon is her husband.
Got you.
But he had an alibi, and he was, like, in Mississippi. So they were like, yeah, it's probably not him.
Yeah.
So this is when we kind of get into the theory. It became a theory that Brandon's father, Randy, committed the murder for his son.
What? Why?
Randy was the same size and the height as, and had the same walk as the attacker. So It was oddly similar. 4 days after the murder, Randy took into the dry cleaners to clean an XXL woman's shift shirt soaked in blood. Blood ended up being that of a injured chihuahua. So Randy was apparently in California during the murder as well, so they quickly ruled him out.
All suspiciously in other states.
Yeah. So we're going to get into suspects now. The first suspect is the man who attended Missy's classes. He had a wife who was short with a broken foot, and they were quickly ruled out. They thought maybe she was sleeping with this man, and the wife found out and was like, oh, I'll just kill Missy.
That's such a direct line of thinking.
So they ruled her out pretty quickly. Then there was this woman named April Sandoval. She won, like, free classes, and she went to 4 out of the 5 free classes. She had an injured right foot, was the same build and height, and was also paying rent on a Nissan Altima. She was ruled out soon after for unknown reasons.
That's really sketchy. She kind of hits a lot of boxes.
Yeah. There are no more suspects, and now we're going to get into some theories. So the first theory is unmotivated and unplanned murder, hard to believe due to the security footage being so strange that it was just unplanned. But that's the first thing. Next is that it was unplanned, but the suspect just wanted to murder anyone, and she showed up, so she was murdered. Which makes a little bit more sense. Breaks into a church, kind of waits around for somebody to show up so they just can murder somebody, you know?
Yeah, I feel it was more deliberate, though, because did anyone else show up at the church in that time? Or is it just Missy?
No, but they also might not have known that she had classes. They could have just been like, okay, I'll just wait.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is that the person was hired to kill Missy. Could have been hired by Randy or Brandon, because Brandon was furious at Missy about the affair.
I would be too. You're flirting, you're disrespecting me by flirting with someone in general, but you're disrespecting me even further by flirting with someone to someone's on LinkedIn.
Well, no, Missy genuinely also had affairs with people.
But still, that's what stings the most is the LinkedIn part. Least you could have done was cheat on me properly.
Yeah, well, anyways, Randy murdered her is the next theory. Brandon hired someone is the next theory. I mean, these both could happen. Randy's very close to his son, very protective, and also knew about the affairs and probably could have been like, hey, hire a hitman, but whatever. And then the seventh one is that she didn't know them, but they knew her, and they were jealous and angry because Missy had accumulated lots of money, lots of, popularity through all of her stuff. And the last one is the wife of the person she was having an affair with, did it, and that... Because the wife of the person that she had an affair with was actually pregnant.
Oh.
Which would explain why they were kind of short. Women do not get that tall, typically. Mm-hmm. Explain why they kind of have a bigger body type that we can tell from the SWAT uniform. Explain why they're in a SWAT uniform, because then it's like, well.
Well, I wonder who one of these suspects were showing a little bit.
Yeah. You can't show that she's pregnant, so yeah. And then also explains the walk. When you get to such a stage in pregnancy, sometimes it can affect the way that you walk because you're carrying a 9-pound child. And
you gotta waddle.
So that's quite literally the end of this case.
That was kind of fast.
Well, it was about 20 minutes, but it was 4 years ago. They have no more suspects. They have no idea what happened. It was weird security footage. I actually super recommend for y'all to go and look up the security footage for Terry Beavers, Missy Beavers, whatever you can call her either. It's weird. It's really freaking weird. I just, it was so eerie to me to watch that. It was like, what is happening? Like, what is this person doing?
Yeah.
It's so crazy to me that there's just somebody standing, like, it's, that's just absolutely terrifying, in my opinion, because it's like, anywhere you go, it's just like, what if somebody's literally standing there waiting for you to yeah. enter?
It's kind of like the thought of, like, that you're never safe.
Yeah. So, anyways, on that note, that is the end of my short one today. I decided to do a shorter one for the sake of time. I'll probably end up doing a longer one pretty soon and cover an actual serial killer. I've been trying to cover more, like, unknown cases just because, I don't know, I feel like these people that were murdered deserve to have their story heard because, especially, like, unsolved ones.
Yeah, definitely.
Because this is not right. The world is not right. But I'll probably end up covering some, like, famous serial killers that I called dibs on, LMAO. Mm-hmm. Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy. So
all the big boys, except also, for the Night Stalker, because I did that one already.
Yeah. Also, I might end up covering Marilyn Monroe at some point, just because...
Interesting.
Even though it's not considered a case, like, we think she died of suicide, there's just so many eerie factors to that, so...
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I think we're going to take a quick break to recap your thoughts, think of what y'all think, and what do y'all think happened with Terry Beavers, with Missy? You should email us or comment on Instagram what you think it is. Yeah,
go drink some water and we'll be right back. We are back.
Crazy.
That is what works. That is how it works when you press record.
That is true. So, you ready to dive into your case of the week?
Yes, ma'am. I've have like 2.5 to 3 pages of research for you guys, because they did a lot of awful stuff. So, all right, here we go. So, I literally don't know how to pronounce this because it's such a weird name. I'm gonna go with Micah. It's spelt weird though. It's MICAJAH. I don't know, but they're Scottish, and I'm just going to go with the J is silent. So you guys can correct me, but for now, his name is Micah. Anyways, so Micah Big Harp was born Joshua Harper sometime before 1748 with his brother Wiley Little Harp, who was born William Harper, who was also born sometime before 1750. So... in the late 18th century, the people of Tennessee, Kentucky, and Illinois, Mississippi were terrified of the men who became known as the earliest documented serial killers in the United States. So, as children of Scottish immigrants, their loyalty was originally to the crown, Britain. So, during the American Revolution, as former loyalists, their patriotic neighbors treated them with disdain and anger. The Harp brothers, who were thought to be cousins, became outlaws after the war turned to the American side.
They began... random question.
Yeah.
Were they ever caught and prosecuted or punished?
You're going to see in a minute.
Okay.
Because I answer your question later. I honestly, I love it. It's beautiful, but we'll get there in a minute. So... they began robbing and killing settlers that settled west into the frontier towards the Appalachian Mountains. The smallest number of people that fell victim to them are as little as 39, but a lot of people say that it's as many as 50. So this little duo is a pretty prolific serial killing gang. So during the American Revolution, according to the eyewitness account of Captain James Wood of the Continental Army, the Harps joined a Tory rape gang in North Carolina. So a Tory is a term for people who are, like, British people, I believe, that are loyalist to the crown. They're very, like, the crown knows what they're doing. Like, I put my trust in the king or the queen and whatever. And so they were very, like, not liked. And it's still a political party to this day, I believe. And they're still kind of not liked. Anyways, So they joined a rape gang in North Carolina. And so this group, a rape gang. R-A-P-E. Like R-A-P-E. They were in a gang that would go rape people.
I assume primarily women.
For the most part. Basically, if you were patriotic, you were on their list. Like, if you were a patriot, because they were bitter about the loss.
To specifically sexually assault.
Yes. So this group used the violence and feeling of the lawlessness of the war to excuse their actions where they raped, stole, murdered, and burned down farms and families that were patriot in nature. So Micah Harp kidnapped Captain James Wood's daughter, Susan Wood, who later married him.
Oh, shoot.
Mm-hmm. And had his babies.
Oh, my God. This is like an awful movie that I really shouldn't bring up. Oh, my God.
You can bring it up later. Or you can bring it up now.
No, it's just like a highly inappropriate movie. But I haven't seen it. I've just heard of it on TikTok. It's called like 365 Days. Don't watch it. It's really not worth it.
Mm, interesting.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey, but 10 times worse. And this guy kidnaps this girl for like a year, and then she like marries him.
Or that's almost, called Stockholm Syndrome.
Anywho. Well, yeah.
So when the revolution ended in favor of the Patriots, the Harps were forced out of North Carolina along with the rest of their rape gang and went to the Tennessee villages of the Chickamauga, Cherokee Indian like people. So basically they found allies with them, which is just ugh. So they joined these things called war parties where they would attack these patriots to get revenge. And so basically it gives Indians a bad name when they're kind of like put together with rape gangers from North Carolina, which is why I went ugh. As a Native American, I'm not saying that they're gross. I don't like the fact that they went with them. Anyways, sometime during 1797, the duo began a vicious crime spree through Kentucky and Illinois, which started while living near Knoxville, Tennessee. So they were being driven out of the town after being charged with stealing hogs or horses. This was also where they were accused of kind of like their first murder of a man named Johnson. So his body was found in a river where his chest...
First name Johnson?
His first name was Johnson.
That's weird.
So his body was found in a river where his chest was ripped open and the cavity was filled and weighted down with stones. And then, on top of all that, he was covered in urine.
But if he was in a river, how do they know he covered in urine?
Because it's the stench, you can smell it.
But, like, does the river not wash it away?
Well, yeah, but I'm assuming it was a small river, so, like, he was on the banks of the river. Mm-hmm. So, from there, after they kind of, like, you know, got caught, they fled to Kentucky, where they are believed to have murdered a peddler, which is kind of, like, a person that makes things. I think it's shoes or something. I might be wrong. A peddler named Peyton, as they took his horse and some of his goods. It is then believed that they murdered two travelers from Maryland a few months later. After that, a man named John Langford, who was traveling from Virginia, turned up dead. And the local innkeeper who had, like, been in charge of John's, like, stay, placed the Harps as a name the authorities needed to look into. So, basically, this innkeeper was like, these guys are kind of shady. I need you to go look at them. Thanks. So... then they were caught and jailed in the state prison in Danville, Kentucky. But they escaped literally like within a few days. Their next victim was the son of a man who assisted the authorities in trying to track down them, and who was found mutilated and dead. Like, he just ripped him apart. He wasn't even a part of the search, but his father was. So they felt that it was enough to kind of warrant his death. All right. Yeah. So, in April of 1799, Kentucky Governor James Gerard, or Garrard, I don't know how to pronounce it, placed a $300 reward for both of their brothers' return. And as they fled northward, their brothers killed two men named Edmonton and Stump. And so basically, in 1700s, $300 for two people, that's 600 bucks. That's like a lot of money. That's like hundreds of thousands of dollars in today's like currency. So in Illinois, near the Saline River, the duo came across three men that were camping out and killed them. On their run, they made it all the way to this place called the Cave-In Rock, which is a natural cave system of the Ohio River, where a river pirate and criminal gang, Samuel Mason, where the leader, whose name was Samuel Mason, had a stronghold. So the band that had been following them stopped short of the cave because they didn't want to, like, you know, get killed by Samuel Mason and his gang. So here's the fun part. So while the gang was known to be ruthless and would prey on slow-moving flatboats making their way down the Ohio River, they were disgusted by the actions of the Harps. So the brothers often would take travelers to the top of the cliffs, strip them naked, and then shove them off. And then these actions forced Samuel Mason, the big bad leader of this gang, to get rid of them and their family. So at this point, both of the brothers were married and had three children. Which is insane to me, because during this time that you've murdered, pillaged, and raped and whatever, you've managed to steal women from their homes, force them to marry you, and then have your babies. That's insane. Disgusting to me.
How do they do that? It's like two lives.
I know, it's very...
That's like Hannah Montana, but the bad version.
Yeah. Evil, like, 18th century Hannah Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow. It was then that the families went back to Tennessee, so basically the Harp brothers and their wives and the kids, where they pretty much continued to kill people. So they reportedly killed a farmer named Bradbury and a man named Hardin, as well as a young boy named Coffee, all in the month of July, 1798. So after this, the body of William Ballard was found disemboweled and thrown into the Houlton River, which is...
They love rivers.
They really do love rivers, and I don't know why. Like, a lot of the bodies are found either disemboweled or... like cut into. So they had a thing for knives. And if I don't know if you've seen or like heard, like read a description of disemboweling, but it is the most, it seems like the most painful and disgusting way to die. Like one of them.
Would you
like
to explain?
Hmm?
Would you like to explain?
Okay, I will explain. So basically, when you're disemboweling someone, what you do is you cut the lower stomach open.
Wait, and this is while they're alive?
Yes, while they're alive. You cut the lower stomach open, kind of like a C-section, and you grab the large intestine, not the large intestine, the small intestine, because it's technically actually larger, whatever. You grab the intestines and you drag them out. But how you drag them is you grab onto them and then you have someone else pull them back. So you're in one place and then they're moving back very slowly as their intestines are being pulled out of their body. So essentially they either die because they bled out or they die from shock. And it is the most disgusting way to die, in my opinion. Like, other than, like, dysentery.
What's that?
It's basically where you poop yourself to death. Like, you literally, you have diarrhea until you die. It's really sad. But it's also really gross.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, on this place called Brassel's Knob, the bodies of John Tully and James Brassel were found with their throats viciously thrashed. So basically, they were just all cut up and gross and dead. So John Graves and his teenage son were found with their heads cut off with an axe in Kentucky. And this is assumed to be by their brother's hand. It's not completely known. If you haven't been able to really, like, tell, a lot of these kills are kind of just based off of assumption and then later confession. But they don't know for sure. Anyways, in Logan County, the duo killed a little girl, an entire family they had found asleep in their camp, as well as a young slave. And so these next two ones are a little intense, and then we get to the justice part. All right. In 1799, because of her constant crying and inability to be quiet, Micah Harp bashed his infant daughter's head against a tree. Later that month, a man named Trowbridge was found disemboweled in Highland Creek. They were given shelter in the home of the Steagles, where they killed the guest at the who was like the guest at the house, who was Major William Love, and the man and the woman of the house, Mr. and Mrs. Moses Steagle, as well as their four-month-old baby, whose throat they slit while he cried. Whoa. So, because she was in anguish about her child's murder, Mrs. Moses Steagle was then also murdered. So she had to watch her child's throat get slit in front of her.
Absolutely no regard for human life.
Mm-hmm. That one's, it's a little intense, which is why I did have a warning. All right, so the next killing is the only one that we're going to continue to feel bad about, because of the rest of the killing from after this one, you don't got to feel bad for. All right. So near the Mammoth Cave in Kentucky, which is actually a place I visited a lot of times, it's one of the largest cave systems in America, and it is gorgeous. And I had absolutely no clue that at the mouth of one of the openings, this happened. So basically, it was the scene of a gruesome murder in which the Harps killed a young black man whose head they again bashed into a tree. So they had a thing for using their hands or knives.
So why do we not feel bad about this murder?
No, the one after this murder.
Oh, I was going to say.
Not that murder. No, we feel bad for that one. This next one, we don't. All right. So in August of 1799, so a few months later, the Harp brothers were chased down by a group led by a man avenging the death of Moses Steagle, whose name was John Leiper. So this is the man that's leading everything. So basically, they told them to surrender, and instead the brothers decided to flee, because they're like, we've been getting away with it for so long, we can do it again. And so Micah was shot in the leg and the back, and this is where he was subdued by a tomahawk. And I don't know if you've seen a tomahawk, but those things are kind of scary.
What are they?
It's a kind of an axe, but it's a Native American axe, kind of.
Oh.
But they're like, they have either a blunt side or another sharp thing on the other side of them. And they were decorated with the hides of their kills. And they kind of scary. And they also tended to have points at the end of them, like from arrows or teeth. Anyways, so basically, where Micah Harp laid dying, he confessed to at least 20 murders. and stated that the murder of his own infant daughter was the only killing he felt remorse for. It was out of all of those people that he killed, the only one he felt bad for was killing his child in front of its mother. That was it. So, Leiper's response was, while Micah was still conscious, Leiper used the tomahawk to slowly cut off Micah's head. And so then he placed the head on a spike or a tree near the home of the people he was avenging. So basically near the Stiegel home. And next we have the younger brother. So don't think we forgot about Wiley. So basically he escapes this confrontation because they're kind of distracted with, you know, beheading Micah. And so he rejoins the Mason Gang Pirates. And while here, he used the alias of John Seton. So at this time, there were no known portraits of the Harp brothers. So no one kind of really knew who they were visually. They just knew them by name. So Harp, or Seton, and Samuel Mason then escaped a capturing of the pirate gang together with Peter Alston around 4-ish years after his brother had died. So they then in turn, so Harp and Alston, tried to claim the bounty on Mason's head, in which they literally handed in Mason's head to the authorities, where they were recognized by the Kentucky government. Because if you remember, the governor had placed $600 for both of their heads, and they kind of knew what he looked like. And so in January of 1804, so a little under 5 years after his brother was killed, both Peter Alston and Wiley Harp were executed by hanging. So my favorite tidbit of this little trial is simply that the fact that Peter Alston and Wiley Harp, their heads were cut off after they were hung and placed on stakes to ward off other outlaws to kind of tell them, we caught them, we'll catch you. So that is the awful tale of America's first serial killers.
Really is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. That is the Harp brothers. They are absolutely disgusting.
That's just so interesting to me that there can be people born out there that have just absolutely no regard for any kind of human life, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's just so interesting to me because they killed regardless. They killed literally, if you prompted them, they would murder you.
Yikes.
It didn't matter.
I doubt that they only killed like 50 people.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They definitely killed way more.
I think Ted Bundy killed over 100 people, like, and he had way less opportunity.
Yeah.
So
it really showcases the fact that if given the chance, humanity is disgusting.
I don't know. Like, what's your opinion? Do you think people are born evil?
Don't think that people are inherently evil. I feel like if they are given the choice, just an example, if you were given, let's say it's The Purge, just classic fiction example. It's The Purge. You've never stolen anything in your life. You are given this one chance a year to do something. Would you A, stay inside and not go do anything, even as petty as like steal candy from the store, or B, go get a flat screen TV from like Walmart?
Oh, I would definitely start stealing stuff, but I don't think that when I'm saying evil, I'm talking murder, rape.
I feel like people, if given the chance and enough motive, they can be, but it's not all people. So I don't think that people are inherently evil. I agree with that statement.
No, it's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that
I was saying I don't agree with the statement. in and of itself. I know that's not what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I'm saying, though, I think that some people are born like that. I just think that there's just some people in the world that are like that. Because I can't give you any type of upbringing in which that was, like, an option, you know? Like, I know, like, for instance, Ted Bundy grew up in a divorced household. And people are like, well, that could have started it. I'm like, well, I grew up in a divorced household, and I'm not going to go out and murder people. Like, yes, people can have a hard childhood, and several people, no, like, millions upon millions, even billions of people go through hard childhoods, and they go through rough times, but that does not make a person want to murder.
Yeah.
That becomes who they are.
I feel like it's really, it's down to kind of chemistry, really.
Yeah, I think it's something that you're just born with. I think it's like any kind of mental illness. Psychopathy.
That's the right word.
Yeah, it's psychopathy. That is an actual thing. That is, every single serial killer is a psychopath, and I don't mean that lightly. I've had,
well, either a psychopath or a sociopath. Either or.
I don't know. I had a conversation with somebody that works with worked in this type field, and they're like, no, if you're a serial killer, if you murder over and over again over the course, because to become a serial killer, you have to murder over a specific amount of people over a specific amount of time. Or it's considered a mass murder if it's in a short period of time. For serial killers, I'm pretty sure you have to be a psychopath. Because I actually talked to a woman about this who was, like, a professional in this field. She was like, no, they're psychopaths if they're serial killers. Mass murderers, that could be different. That could even be, psychotic break. But to be able to murder over and over over such a period of time and, like, da-da-da, like, have absolutely no remorse for human life, that's psychopathy, not sociology. Or not sociology, sorry.
Sociopathy.
Yeah. That's, I'm pretty sure, because we were talking, I remember having this discussion because I went camping with this family, and this woman worked in the military, pretty high ranking, and she worked with these kinds of cases. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, and I was talking to her, I was like, are you sure? Like, because I had the same question, like, oh, are you sure it can't be a sociopath? Like, and she goes, no, to be a serial killer, I'm talking Dahmer, Bundy, Wayne Gacy, these Hart brothers or the Night Stalker, she goes, you have to be a psychopath for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting. Sociopath, you can still be a murderer and be a sociopath, but I'm pretty sure to be a serial killer, that's a different story.
Yeah, I'm just looking at an article right now, and it says, one can make the argument that serial killers suffer from psychopathy, that because they are psychopaths, they have no sense of remorse or empathy, and their decision-making process is faulty. Interestingly, however, not all serial killers are psychopaths, according to the hair test, a psychiatric diagnostic, or at least don't test as such.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just what my experience talking to somebody who, like, worked in the field. She was working and stuff like this. She was like, yeah, no, they have to be a psychopath. Like, it's just, she goes, that or there has never been a serial killer that on record that wasn't one.
Yeah.
And so that was really interesting to hear, because I always was like, oh, well, it's just a sociopath. And then I was talking about this. She was like, uh-uh. She was, no way. And I was like, seriously? And so that was a really interesting conversation. I wish I could have recorded it.
Yeah. That is an interesting conversation.
So it was really cool.
And it brings up an interesting question. But I personally don't think that all serial killers are psychopaths, because there are some serial killers that are... that experience sociopathy.
Well, the thing is, you can be a sociopath and a psychopath.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean inherently that you are, like, you're a psychopath and then that's all you are. So that's to say that all serial killers are psychopaths, and then even if some of them are still sociopaths, it's still disregarding that they are a sociopath as well as a psychopath.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not saying at all that, like, they are not sociopaths. I'm just saying that all of them are psychopaths, but some of them, yes, are also sociopaths.
They're, yeah, or have some form of psychopathy. Yeah.
But honestly, I just, I don't know. I feel so weird talking about serial killers sometimes. Sometimes I get in such a bad mood about it. I'm like, I don't even care. They do not deserve my thought process on it, because I'm like,
you don't deserve the space in my brain. In the sense
of
like
giving them the relief of saying, I don't even know. It's just so weird.
Well, I feel like the more you talk about something, the more you say its name, the less fear it holds over you.
I completely disagree with that.
Really?
Yeah, I think if something
there's actually you. There's a lot of like psychological studies where it's kind of like it's the Voldemort thing. The more you say someone's name, the less the name has a grip over you, or it's supposed to, anyways.
Well, I mean, I guess that would just depend on the person, because for me, I purposely look up things that scare me, and they don't scare me any less after I look them up. I sit in my room talking about these topics. Only specific ones kind of really creep me out, and even talking about them for 3 or 4 times, I just, it's still creeping me out, like, you know?
Interesting.
But that's just me. Same with people. If I have a problem with people, it doesn't really go away. Like, the more I talk about it, it just honestly makes it worse most of the time. That's why I avoid talking about things. I'm like, oh, I'm good.
Interesting. Well, now we know.
I hope that y'all enjoyed this episode of the unsolved murder of Missy Beavers and the first American serial killers on record, the Harp brothers. If y'all have any requests for any cases you would like either of us to cover, please email us ourkillerpodcast@gmail.com. DM us on Instagram at ourkillerpodcast. Yeah,
we would love to hear from you.
Yeah,
well, we hope you guys have a great week. Stay hydrated.
To our sister podcast, Our Inner Thoughts. Also, well, when you're listening to this, it should already be out. So,
yeah. If we've done our job, at least.
Yeah. Have a wonderful week.
Yeah. We'll see you next week, guys. Bye.